Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
Talk. It's called The Wisdom of Chan Master Shen Tsung. The Great Way is not difficult. It only avoids picking and choosing. This saying is from Shinsen Tsing Ming, or more commonly known as the Faith Mind Poem, by the third patriarch of Chan, Shen Tsung, or Soshin in Japanese. The poem has been much beloved by Zen practitioners for ages. This phrase is perhaps the greatest single sentence summary of Zen practice. In other words, if we transcend all preferences, distinctions, and opinions, or dualistic views, the true nature of reality is revealed. Or as Shen Tsung notes, everything becomes clear and undisguised. The Shen Tsung Ming is the fusion of Taoism and Buddhism. To put this in historical perspective, as I mentioned, Shen Tsung was the third patriarch of Chan. The first patriarch, as we know, was Bodhidharma, who brought Buddhism to China and is credited with the beginning of Chan or Zen. The second patriarch was Hu Qi, and some say that he was a noted scholar of Buddhist scriptures. And if you remember when I gave the teaching on Bodhidharma, you know, he was the one that stood up to his knees in snow, waiting at in front of Bodhidharma's cave, trying to persuade him for Bodhidharma to be his teacher. And then after a few days of freezing out in the snow, he decided to cut his arm off and give it to Bodhidharma as a sign of devotion. Take it with you will, if you believe that or not. But makes a good story. This brings us to Sung Sang. He lived around 600 AD. There's actually very little known of Sung Sang. He's only really known for his Faith in Mind poem. A poem that some say is an excellent example of Taoism through the eyes of a Zen master. The phrase Faith in Mind contains two meanings, believing in and realizing the mind. True faith in mind is the belief grounded in the realization that we have a fundamental, unmoving, unchanging mind, or the mind of a Buddha. But the mind experienced by us in daily life is deluded mind, not true mind, according to Zen and Chan masters. The poem points the way on how to transform our ordinary discriminating mind into the mind of a Buddha, which does not pick and choose between likes and dislikes. Many people begin Zen practice as a way to find peace of mind, but how can that be possible in a world where the law of impermanence leaves nothing untouched? True peace is not dependent on external conditions. It begins with our mind. And this takes us right back to the Buddha's Four Noble Truths, the very first teaching of the Buddha after his enlightenment experience. And as we know, first there's dukkha. Life has its challenges. There is discomfort, discontent. Second noble truth, the cause of this discomfort and discontent is our own clinging and aversion. And third, there's a way out of this discomfort and dissatisfaction. And fourth, the way out is to train our minds to let go of our clinging and aversion by practicing the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. From a Zen perspective, embracing the teachings found in the Faith in Mind poem contains almost all of the elements of the Noble Eightfold Path. So what I'd like to do is to read the Faith in Mind poem. It's about 7 minutes long, but it's really beautiful. And you'll see what I mean. And most of the time when you see references to the Faith in Mind poem, it's really focused on the first three or four verses, and that's about it. You know, you really don't hear or learn about the rest of it. So that's why it's worth to really go through at some point. So here we go. The great way is not difficult for those who do not pick and choose. Let go of longing and aversion, and everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. If you want to realize the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. Like and dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of the way is not understood, the intrinsic peace of mind is disturbed. As vast as infinite space, it is perfect and lacks nothing. Indeed, it is due to your grasping and repelling that you do not see things as they are. Do not get entangled in things. Do not get lost in emptiness. Be still in the oneness of things, and dualism vanishes by itself. When you try to stop motion to achieve quietude, the very effort fills you with activity. As long as you hold on to opposites, you will never know the way. Those who do not understand the way will assert or deny the reality of things. Deny the reality of things, you miss its deeper reality. Assert the reality of things, you miss the emptiness of all things. The more you think about it, the further you are from the truth. Cease all thinking, and there is nothing that will not be revealed to you. To return to the root is to find the essence, but to pursue appearances is to miss the source. The moment you are enlightened, you go beyond appearances and emptiness. Changes that seem to occur in the empty world appear real only because of ignorance. Do not search for truth, only cease to cherish opinions. Do not hold to dualistic views. Avoid such habits carefully. If there is even a trace of right and wrong, the mind is lost in confusion. Although all dualities arise from the one, do not cling even to this one. When the mind exists undisturbed in the way, everything is without fault. When things can no longer be faulty, it is as if there are no things. When the mind can no longer be disturbed, it is as if there is no mind. When thought objects vanish, the thinking subject vanishes. When the mind vanishes, objects vanish. The arising of others gives rise to self, and giving rise to self generates other. Know these seeming two facets as one emptiness. In this emptiness, the two are indistinguishable, and each contains in itself the whole. When no discrimination is made between this and that, how can you prefer one to the other? The great way is all-embracing, not easy, not difficult. Those who rely on limited views are fearful and irresolute. The faster they hurry, the slower they go. Clinging, they go too far. Even an attachment to enlightenment is to go astray. Just let things be in their own way, as they are. and there is neither coming nor going. Be in harmony with the way, and you will be free of disturbances. Tied by your thoughts, you lose the truth. Become heavy, dull, unwell. Not well, the mind is troubled. Then why cling to or even reject anything? If you wish to move in the one way, do not dislike even the world of senses and ideas. Indeed, to accept them fully is identical with true enlightenment. The wise attaches to no goals, but the foolish fetter themselves. There is but one Dharma, not many. Distinctions arise from the clinging needs of the ignorant. Using mind to stir up the mind is the original mistake. Peaceful and troubled derive from thinking. Enlightenment has no likes or dislikes. All dualities come from ignorant inference. They are like unto dreams or flowers in the air. The foolish try to grasp them. Gain and loss, right and wrong, abandon all such thoughts at once. If the eye never sleeps, all dreams will naturally cease. If the mind makes no distinctions, all things are as they are, of one essence. To understand the mystery of this one essence is to be released from all entanglements. When all things are seen without differentiation, you return to the origin and remain what you are. Consider the movement in stillness and the stationary in motion. But movement and rest disappear. When such dualities cease to exist, even oneness itself cannot exist. This ultimate state is not bound by rules and descriptions. For the realized mind, at one with the way, all doing ceases. Doubts and irresolutions vanish, and the truth is confirmed in you. With a single stroke, you are freed from bondage. Nothing clings to you, and you hold on to nothing. All is void, clear, and self-illuminating, with no need to exert the mind. Here, thinking, feeling, knowledge, and imagination are of no value. In this world of as it really is, there is neither self nor other. To swiftly accord with that, only express non-duality. In this non-duality, nothing is separate. Nothing is excluded. The enlightened of all times and places have personally realized this truth. The truth is beyond time and space. One instant is eternity, not here, not there, but everywhere, always right before your eyes. Infinitely large, infinitely small, no difference, for definitions have vanished, and no boundaries can be discerned. So too with existence and non-existence. Don't waste time in arguments and discussion, attempting to grasp the ungraspable. One thing and everything. Move among the intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is not to worry about perfection or non-perfection. To put your trust in the way is to live without separation. And in this non-duality, you are one with the way. Words, words. The way is beyond language. Words never could, cannot now, and never will describe the way. So when you hear something like that, I guess you're left scratching your head. You know, it sounds like a poetic koan, you know. And, you know, you can see why sometimes this poem is referred to as the poem of nothing. You know, trying to make sense of this. But as you read through it a few times, you kind of get the gist of things. The words in the first line of the poem, The Great Way, refers to the state of Buddhahood, and that the wisdom of the Buddha is not difficult to perceive because it is never separate from us. It's always present. We just need to peel away our conditioning to realize our Buddha nature. It is our picking and choosing, referenced in the second line of the poem, that prevents us from seeing our true nature. I'd like to share a koan involving Joshu regarding picking and choosing. And Joshu is among the most esteemed and frequently quoted ancestor of Chan, and he lived around 800 AD. He appears in numerous times in the various koan collections. So here we go. Joshu, teaching the assembly, said, "The ultimate path is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words spoken, this is picking and choosing. This is clarity. This old monk does not abide within clarity. Do you still preserve anything or not?" At that time, a certain monk asked, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" Joshu replied, "I don't know either." The monk said, "Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide in clarity?" Joshu, "It is enough to ask about the matter, bow, and leave." So this is from the Blue Cliff Record collection, and I'll come back to this koan shortly. This koan is just one of four cases in the Blue Cliff Record koan collection where Joshu appears. And I'd like to read the opening lines of the other koans, and you'll see how important this topic of picking and choosing was to Joshu. And this is from case number 57. A monk asked Joshu, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. Why is it not picking and choosing?" The next koan. A monk asked Joshu, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. Isn't this a cliche for people of these times?" And then the next koan. A monk asked Joshu, "The ultimate path has no difficulties. Just avoid picking and choosing. As soon as there are words and speech, this is picking and choosing. So how do you help people, teacher?" To paraphrase the next few lines of the poem, as soon as we discard our likes and dislikes, the great way will immediately appear before us. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. When likes and dislikes are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. When duality is absent, everything becomes clear. But as noted in the koan, we shouldn't cling to clarity either. The other side of clarity is confusion, and both are a disease of the mind. This is what Joshu was referring to in this exchange with the monk. To chase after clarity is just another dualistic view. Back to the koan. The monk asked Joshu, "Since you do not abide within clarity, what do you preserve?" Joshu then gives the monk a non-answer. "I don't know either." The monk continues to press Joshu for an answer. "Since you don't know, teacher, why do you nevertheless say that you do not abide within clarity?" Joshu responds, "It's enough to ask about the matter, bow and leave." Joshu is essentially saying to the monk, "Good question. Just leave it at that." Mm-hmm. You know? And Joshu's response is rooted in these four lines of the Faith in Mind poem. The more you think and talk about it, the further you are from the truth. Cease all thinking and talking, and there is nothing that will not be revealed to you. All dualities are mutually arising. They are all codependent. You can't have one without the other. Good and bad, heads and tails, heaven and earth. And that is why it is said, make the smallest distinction in heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. They are not set apart until we separate them with our minds. The world we live in is unfortunately founded on the dualistic use of the mind. But the Buddha went beyond dualism, beyond the distinction between this and that, to show that there is no self, that what we call the self is a creation of our own consciousness, which separates us from everything else. Picking and choosing, coming and going, likes and dislikes, inside and outside, having and not having, accepting and rejecting, form and emptiness, right and wrong, all begin with our minds, making the smallest distinctions. As you know, here at Jizuan Temple, and when we meet on Zoom, we greet each other by placing the palms of our hands in Gaosho and bowing. Using the Gaosho and bow in this way is certainly a nice way to greet each other, and has been used as a form of greeting at Zen centers and monasteries for centuries. However, to view the Gaosho only as a form of greeting really misses the true meaning of it. The Gaosho is really a gesture of unity. It signifies that the giver and receiver of the bow are one, not two. It is symbolic of the Dharma, the truth about life. For instance, we place together our right and left hand, which are opposites. It represents the merging of other opposites as well, light and dark, ignorance and wisdom. And if you notice, when in Gaosho, the hands are located between the heart and the mind. So it represents the merging of the opposites as well. You know, it represents the merging of the heart and the mind, compassion and wisdom. It also is an expression of our feelings of gratitude and our interconnectedness of everything, of each other. It symbolizes the realization that our lives are supported by innumerable causes and conditions. Later in the poem, one thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road of non-duality, because the non-dual is one with a trusting mind. One thing, all things, move among and intermingle without distinction. And when I read the lines, you know, these lines in the poem, I can't help but think of the jewel net of Indra, or Indra's net, a much-loved metaphor of Mahayana Buddhism. Everything throughout space and time is interconnected. And at each connection, at each point, is a diamond that reflects every other diamond, so that in this vast net, each diamond contains every other diamond. This is one thing, all things, moving among, intermingling without distinction. The diamond net is the unfailing source of life. We separate ourselves from this unfailing source of life with our mind, our thoughts, our ideas. But the only way we separate ourselves is mentally, because as the poem points out, one thing, all things, move among and intermingle, is just the way it is. Regardless of whether we live our lives according to this understanding or not, the fact remains that it is the way things are. With our minds, we separate ourselves and immediately create all the dualities of life. Greed, anger, ignorance, the three poisons of Zen. We also have the potential to create the other side of life: joy, compassion, wisdom. In the vast net, in the vast diamond net of Indra, each thing contains everything, and each thing is separate and distinct from everything else. Thinking, talking, and doing are the ways we create our lives, the ways we create karma, cause and effect. We can see how our actions create causes, and we can see how that every cause has consequences. Talking, thinking, and doing can create karma. We can use karma to poison or to nourish, depending upon how we manifest it. How do we manifest it so that it nourishes, so that it heals? According to the poem, by not talking, non-thinking, non-doing. How do we do non-thinking and non-doing? How can we possibly avoid picking and choosing in this regard? And this takes us back to the four lines that framed the dialogue between Joshu and the monk. The more you talk and think about it, the further astray you wander from the truth. Stop talking and thinking, and there's nothing that you will not be able to know. These lines of the poem seem to imply that we should stop knowing and stop non-knowing. If you think about it, knowing is another kind of holding on, of separation. Not knowing is blank consciousness, emptiness. How do we avoid these extremes of form and emptiness? By learning to be ourselves. It is stated in the poem, "Be serene in the oneness of things." This does not mean to just kick back and watch the world go by and do nothing. Being ourselves means giving ourselves permission to be who and what we are. That is faith mind. Having faith in our true self, trusting ourselves. Until that happens, we cannot really trust anything or anybody. When we have that trust, our defensiveness disappears. We don't need to be judgmental or focused on ourselves, or to put ourselves down, or to hide, or to withdraw. These extremes are the same thing, just different ways of protecting that idea of a separate self. Being ourself is the beginning of intimacy with all things, or no separation. So I'd like to summarize by reading the last few verses of the poem again. The truth is beyond time and space. One instant is eternity. Not here, not there, but everywhere, always right before your eyes. Infinitely large, infinitely small. No difference, for definitions have vanished, and no boundaries can be discerned. So too with existence and non-existence. Don't waste time in arguments and discussion, attempting to grasp the ungraspable. One thing in everything. Move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to not worry about perfection or non-perfection. To put your trust in the way is to live without separation. And in this non-duality, you are one with the way. Words, words. The way is beyond language. Words never could, cannot now, and never will describe the way. The Shinshin Ming of Thingsong is like a gentle breeze blowing through a forest that you listen to. It says nothing, but speaks the unknown to those who can hear it.